This is Limitless Possibility. I'm Yannick Magnan.
And I'm Luc-Olivier Dumeblet.
And our topic this week is...
iOS sideloading thanks to the EU's DMA.
Awesome. But first, you have some follow-up.
Yes, I do. So in the past week, I was re-listening to the Tokyo Travel Guide. And as I reacted again during the episode, I was still surprised that my beloved transit app, Transit, was not supporting the greater Tokyo area for its more or less app transit features. So I went through a bit of Googling. I was curious if it was the only big popular Western app that did not support Tokyo. And to my surprise, another big name in that market, CityMapper, does support Tokyo. So I was greatly surprised to see this big competitor to Transit app support that market. But I sent the link to Yannick because it seems that you can also use CityMapper on the web. Again, never tried their app. I was more always a Transit app fan. Again, it's also a Montreal-based company. I kind of know a few people that work there. But I always liked what they were doing and it always solved my needs. So I never looked at the other options. So kind of bring this up to our listeners that are more CityMapper users. It might be a good option, but Yannick tried it and has opinion.
Right. So I tried it shortly before we were recording the show and I tried putting a very simple route into CityMapper on the web and it spat out a bunch of results like you would in Google Maps or Apple Maps or whatever, where it tells you like here are the different routes you can take with different things. And I noticed that like even though there was only one transfer on two of the six options it was proposing me, it was just choking on telling me when the next time was. And I think like the thing that is throwing it off is the notion of express trains and local trains, where they run on different timetables and the local trains have more stops than express trains, which skip certain stops and all of that stuff. And I think that's what was throwing it off, because anything that was duplicated in the results, all of the other ones, it couldn't calculate the time for the other results. So you were just looking at the results and you would have like the slow one that would tell you like, yeah, it's coming in 3 minutes. And then the other ones that would just like tell you calculating time, and it would never calculate the time. So
that's weird.
That seems like a red flag for me. Another thing is when we were talking about transit on the show, like the reason I'm pretty sure this is the reason, but there are two reasons that I can see that transit isn't supporting the Tokyo metro area. And the first thing is there are so many companies to deal with. There are easily over 10 railways to support in that. And I think the model that transit has adopted, which makes sense for a lot of Western transit situations, is they partner with transit authorities individually. And this model does not work for a city like Tokyo, where there is an interconnected network of dozens of agencies that work together. The other problem, of course, is that the UI doesn't scale to the level of the Tokyo needs. The transit UI, if you're not used to it, at the top, like, two-thirds of the screen is just your normal map that shows all of your routes and stuff. And then the bottom third of the map is a list of all of your nearby stations. The problem is, if you've got maybe a dozen train lines near you that are accessible from multiple stations, it can become really confusing to browse that. And the list would become really, really, really long. And I just don't think it's a good UI to interact with for that kind of transit network. I think for small scale stuff like what we have here in Trois-Rivières, what Montreal has, not to say that Montreal is entirely small, but it's definitely smaller scale than Tokyo. And don't forget, like, I'm just talking about the trains in Tokyo. I'm not even talking about buses, which is a whole other ballgame that I've never even tried, honestly.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that. I know you as a train fan that you would just talk about trains, but I was not even aware there was a bus network.
Oh yeah, there's plenty of buses, and I think I've taken the bus maybe twice in Japan, so it's not something that I've done a lot of, so I can't really comment on that. But if you actually wanted to support the entirety of Tokyo metropolitan area transit, it gets really messy really fast, and a lot of app UIs and even sometimes app backends are just very poorly built to handle a network of that size. Just one last point on that before I close it up is this is something I noticed when I was testing CityMapper. It's very hard to just support the city of Tokyo because the network that goes through the city of Tokyo is actually the Japan Rail East network. So it is all of Eastern Japan that is interconnected on the same railway. And technically, after a certain boundary, you're just seamlessly transitioning onto JR Central, which is operated separately, but is on the same rail tracks. So technically, it connects. And
right.
You get into this weird spot where is the boundary where you stop supporting in Tokyo? Because technically, you can get anywhere in Japan from Tokyo with the same trains. So it's like, you kind of have that weird thing where it's like, well, either we are supporting all of Japan or we are supporting none of it, kind of, which is kind of a weird issue to have.
Right, and that model reminds me, again, I haven't been in Sweden for the past 12 years, so take what I'm about to say with a grain of salt, but for the 6 months I lived there, I remember that there was semi-local, I think sometimes they were kind of like transit authorities that were in maybe what we call it here in Canada, part of a province, so maybe a county, I forgot the exact word, but if you more or less took the wrong train, it would start to be kind of like, oh, it does a few stops in this city, and then, oops, if you miss the last stop, you'll just end up in the next city. So that was always something that I found real nice, because again, it does allow you to travel between cities pretty fast, but at the same time, it kind of like, the way I can imagine it is if the metro becomes the inter-agglomeration or an inter-cities train. So I always found it weird. So I'm not... Okay, that... Your explanation kind of makes me think that I understand it more, why more Western apps are not supported. But still, I was quite curious, so that's why I went spelunking. For that.
When the reality is that you can get drunk on a train and then fall asleep and wake up in the countryside in the middle of nowhere, like,
oops.
That's kind of an issue for transit apps too.
Yeah, that sounds dangerous. Okay, so that was my main follow-up item, so we can jump into the main topic. So for this week, I want to talk about sideloading in relation to the EU, so the European Union Digital Market Act, Markets Act. So Yannick and I had this topic on our list for a while, and that's why I'm combining both sideloading and the DMA, because in our idea list, it started as more or less general iOS sideloading as a topic. And the reason it has been on our list for a while is because we kind of heard the rumors for, I would say, 2 or 3 years now. We kind of knew that the Digital Markets Act, that I will stop saying that long name and just say DMA from now on, was kind of, we were in the news, we were seeing the echo of it. But there was this big push that, yeah, Apple got big in the past decade, and they've done a bunch of weird stuff with the App Store, and as somebody that has a professional life on the App Store, not for myself, but through a company I work with, and Yannick had a bit of experience on the App Store too. I think you had a few commercial products sold there under your own name. We kind of experienced firsthand the upsides and downside of how the App Store is run.
I also manage App Store accounts for like 5 clients right now, so
true. I forgot that you're responsible for that much accounts. Like, even being responsible or kind of responsible of the Works account, I do have the admin privileges on it, just because I've been at my current job for a long time, and having to deal with that for 2 or 3 apps is already complex under one account. So I cannot imagine having to do that with multiple accounts for different customers that the business might have. So with the introduction of the DMA starting, the official introduction was in March, but starting January of this year, we got the first glimpse of what will it look like, especially talking about Apple. We kind of wanted to bring this topic up a few weeks ago, but it has been evolving so quickly, more or less every week, that it was hard for us, especially with our different style of podcast episodes, to kind of put it in 1 week, because we were always not curious or pressured, but I would say we were always worried that what we would say on, and I'm breaking the fourth wall here, I won't say on a Thursday night when we record and gets released on a Sunday, will already be out of date. So it felt to me that after the rush that was the early part of the year, and even around March 7th when the rule became quote unquote in effect, that April was calm. And it's funny that they say that, because in preparation for this episode, there was also news today on May 2nd that I'll address part of what I want to do. So yeah, there was already new changes, or Apple acknowledging the latest updates from the European Commission. So I guess it was a good time to bring it up, but expect that we will have our typical follow-up in the weeks to come, because this is an evolving topic.
At least the good news is that they tend to time their news announcements on Thursdays, so we get to know about it the day of recording. However, yes, we don't have very much time to read up on it before recording.
Yeah, and I was happy that this week's kind of Apple's reply to the news was, we knew that the iPadOS was now not considered the gatekeeper OS, and that also they've introduced core technology fee changes that we'll discuss later. So the first one I want to talk about, DMA, is that it covers a lot of ground. So I do strongly suggest that you do your own research about it, because in this episode, I will not cover the different aspects of what this law marks as gatekeepers. They have identified 5 or 6 gatekeepers. I forgot the exact number, but those are familiar names if you follow tech in general. Meta/Facebook, Alphabet, ByteDance. If you never heard ByteDance, the TikTok company, that's the best way to describe it. Because a lot of these tech giants are now regulated under the DMA, but they are regulated differently, because what they are defined as gatekeeper for is not exactly what Apple is defined as a gatekeeper for. I think the closest example will literally be Alphabet/Google, because they also have the Google Play Store and Android. So the other parts, like social network, payments option, and a few other things, I don't plan to cover this week. So that's why I suggest that if you're interested about those, go look at it, because there are also lengthy topics on their own. Second point before we go into deep, before we go too deep inside loading, is that Apple is also regulated for other things under the DMA, like alternative browser engines, access to Apple Laundry hardware. You can read here about mobile payment apps / having full access to an NFC chip on phones, game streaming and other app types. You'll see that the hardware and game streaming and other app types will mention it a bit, but again, there's another part that I don't plan to go into deep, because I really want to focus about quote-unquote sideloading. So with that out of the way, let's get started. We've been talking, and people in tech have been talking a lot about sideloading, and I want to give a small refresher on what does it mean. So in mobile platform like iOS, like Android, the platform owners have more or less have defined how you distribute software for it. If you compare them to the quote-unquote old computing platform or legacy computing platform, I'll let you decide which adjective you want to use here, but I'm talking about Windows, macOS, and Linux boxes. The idea of, in those operating systems, there are different ways to distribute software to those computing platforms. Of course, Apple with the Mac and following the introduction of the App Store on iOS decided to bring the App Store to the Mac with some... I'm not even sure if I should try to say some success, but I guess varying success or varying form of success for the Mac App Store. But they're trying to bring kind of a more centralized approach to software distribution. But again, if I bring up a few ways that you can install software just on your Mac, you could have Package Manager, you could have like the typical way that you would use, like with installers, whether they come downloaded, whether you download them from the web, which is more than now common route, versus having a CD with the installer on it, or things like that. On iOS, that was never really possible unless you're, I guess, Apple itself internally. The only way to get software on an iOS device, and here I include all the other side platforms, so iPadOS, WatchOS, tvOS, the Vision, VisionOS, you need to get your app in Apple's App Store, and that comes with a lot of rules. And we are part of people that throughout our years on the podcast, we mentioned all those funky rules and how they limit what you can do. But by also limiting what you can do, they also control what you can do. And that's where a lot of people have been talking about sideloading. I think a good example of sideloading on iOS that was never officially supported was jailbreaking and installing apps through those third-party app stores. Both Yannick and I, and even Yannick, got great success by having things that were not allowed in the App Store work through the Cydia Store, especially because they were OS modifications. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is one of the good benefits, because we'll talk in more details, especially the way Apple replied to the DMA. I think this part is one of the good benefits of sideloading. It opens opportunities for developer to do different type of software for a specific platform. Of course, if you limit developers, they'll try to find a way to remove those restrictions and let their creativity loose. And I think that was, and I think where it is already a few years behind us, but that was the height of the jailbreak community. And it was, I would dare to say, was not piracy, but really modifying iOS in some sometimes strange fashion, but in interesting fashions too. So that's why I was kind of more optimistic about the rumors that sideloading could come to iOS because of legal threats posed by, at first, some governments, but now more clearly defined the EU with the DMA. I bring this up just to let you have a chance to talk here, Yannick, but I know in our private discussion, you are a bit less confident that sideloading was a good thing for iOS. Do you want to explain a bit why?
Yeah, I don't think that Apple is overstating the security argument here, because I have hands-on experience with friends who have Android phones who have the ability to sideload. And the problem is sideloading opens the door to a bunch of different attacks that would not necessarily be viable on the App Store. So something that I've seen a couple times on some friends' Android phones is they were tricked into sideloading an app by software that told them to go out of their way and allow sideloading. They installed an application that would run a full screen recorder and an overlay that would hijack their taps to make random shit happen on their phone. Now, I understand that this kind of attack is not entirely possible on iOS, right? Because the APIs aren't necessarily there unless you jailbreak to do that kind of thing, whereas they were on Android. But the fact that you can be tricked into sideloading and opening the gates wider than what you have the expectation that apps are allowed to do, given the context of the App Store, is a security risk, no matter how you put it. And I think one of the things that's great about iOS devices and what they brought to the market is that they allowed a whole class of computing users not to care really about what apps they get on their stores. And by undoing that, by adding a sideloading vector to the OS, you're essentially taking away the right not to care from those users. You are telling them, like, because you know, like they've already said it, Epic Games is going to force people to do some sort of workaround to install the Epic Games Store on their phone, which is going to get people comfortable with the fact that they are allowed to sideload, which means that they are more likely to sideload if they are asked by a random ad on the internet. It doesn't mean everyone will, but people with bad judgment will. And previously, people with bad judgment could not fuck up their phones this badly. So I don't know. Maybe it's a bit extreme, but having seen the damages on Android users' phones, I'm tempted to say it is not as trivial a security issue as pro-sideloading people would like you to believe that it is. In a perfect world, where we could ensure that people who do not know what they are doing do not accidentally sideload, then I'm absolutely for it, because I like having that freedom as a power user.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I don't think governments should necessarily be allowed to say a computing appliance is an illegal type of device.
Yeah, okay. I would hold that thought regarding the government say about government appliances, because I kind of don't want to go there right now. But that's a good point. So remind me that if I forget that we need to do that at the end, I want to come back to this, because I have a lot to say regarding kind of the monopolistic tendencies or behavior, and again, it will relate to the future again of quote unquote sideloading or breaking the bonds of iOS past the DMA. But coming back to some of your arguments against sideloading, and I think that's kind of the approach that a lot of people are having, and even Apple, in their defense of saying, okay, we're forced by the EU to do the DMA, but the regulators are downplaying those risks, whether they are security or privacy risk. We assume that those will be problematic, but tough luck, we have to deal with those. We are forced to offer some form of sideloading, and that's kind of where I wanted to come, is that it's not fully what we would expect to be, but we'll define that just a bit. You were saying?
Yeah, I do have another example I want to point out before we move on, which is Facebook for a while, until Google threatened to ban them out of their store for doing this, they were offering incentives to their users to switch to a sideloaded version of the Facebook app.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's kind of cringe. And the sideloaded version of the Facebook app, surprise, surprise, had more permissions than the one that was in the Google Play Store.
Right.
So this is a slippery slope where any of these big companies that have leverage and that are like that you're socially obligated to participate in to some degree, like I could see Discord doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. There is possibility for abuse there. And that's another issue I have with the idea of sideloading for regular users.
Those are good points. And we kind of will bring for this, because originally the first implementation or the first, I guess, iteration of Apple's implementation of the DMA created a blocker for Facebook to do that on iOS, but that got removed. But we'll tackle that once we discuss the alternative app marketplaces. So with that definition of sideloading out of the way and some of the critics, I would like to make it clear, though, that I agree with Yannick's critics, and he's not the only one bringing this up, but I generally tend to believe, especially for computer, I don't want to say appliances, but computers in general, that you should be able to run the software you want to run on it. So I have a more kind of an open approach, or a more kind of you need to be able to do what you want to do with that device, while understanding that there are risks for that. So I have a more of a kind of a pro-user approach or opinion towards that. With that out of the way, I would like to conclude by saying that now, because of the European Union stepping in and defining their own version of sideloading and what they want like app gatekeepers to do, like Google and Apple, then there's this kind of a game of, okay, they interpret, they create a new rule implying they want companies to do X, and of course company like Apple read those and interpret those rules for their own advantage, which brings us to, it is a possibility on iOS, but it is kind of a possibility on iOS. And to describe this kind of statement, I need to cover three big changes that leads me to believe that, generally speaking, even if it's not a clear yes, it is more or less a yes for sideloading for European users. The first big change is regarding the App Store. Generally speaking, for all users throughout the world, Apple did loosen some guidelines. That's where you started to, or we didn't see any apps for that, yes, but they finally said, oh yeah, game streaming apps are allowed on iOS. After years of back and forth and issues with Microsoft, with Nvidia, and other companies, there was possibly a few mentioned in the email that says like, yeah, you cannot really, or you have to loosen, or certain app type that you reject on your app that has needs to be loosened. The other one that made the news round in the past 2 weeks is also game console emulators. With the big one that was brought to the App Store worldwide is the Delta. And we'll talk about the developer behind the Delta emulator later on. Those are the main two changes for the App Store worldwide. The next changes are really based for European companies and European users. The first one is new ways to link to your own payment processing. And that has been one of the big things about the App Store is, yep, we ask for distribution, but any digital commerce made through the App Store needs to use our in-app purchase flow, especially since the introduction of in-app purchase. For sure, to buy the app when it was mainly a market of paid apps, you have to pay, it's available to sell on the App Store. You have to pay on the App Store to buy the app, which means they get this commission. On top of this, there are a lot of other big changes that are under new business terms that you as a European business need to agree to before you can take advantage of those new rights/guidelines from doing business through the App Store and through the iOS platform itself. I've already mentioned linking out to your own purchasing flow. There's also using third-party payment processing. So a lot of the fees or the commission behind the App Store, a lot of people saying, oh yeah, it's like there's credit card processing fees and things like that. So now those are split. There is the official App Store commission fee, and then there's another fee that is for the App Store payment processing. Speaking of App Store commission, this is a typical 30% of all money or all of the sales that developers make on the App Store. 30% goes to Apple and the rest goes to them. Those commissions dropped from 30% to 17%. And for the small business program / any recurring subscription, from 15% to 10%. And those new numbers are excluding the 3% credit card processing fee for the App Store, which means that if you want to take advantage of the 17% or the 10%, you need to do your own credit card processing. And with both Yannick and I experience in payment processing on the web, let me tell you, 3% is not so bad. So you might be able to save more, but you won't be able to get 1% of credit card fees. I guess that's, so 3% is not that high. On top of still having commissions, there is the introduction of a new core technology fee. And it is a fee per first install per year. And this fee is 50 cents euros, or half of a euro. And this fee, according to Apple, is to, it's not a commission, but it's to, it's your fee to pay for the development of the iOS platform and all the APIs and all App Store Connect and all that fun stuff. Which
I thought that's what the $99 a year was for.
it is a good point. As a developer, if you decide to take advantage of those new business term, you get your first million first install for free, because this is included in your $99. I forgot the European price for this, but it's included in your developer membership. So the idea is that even if you deploy on the App Store, you need to pay on top of the commission the core technology fee. So they really split the 30% into three things, more or less. The typical sales commission, because you're on a digital store, you have credit card processing of 3%, and it also includes this core technology fee that is now per usage of your app and less about just a fee per transaction, which means that it is a recurring fee. So the idea behind, if your app is really popular, you get your first million first install. So what they mean by first install is really that, let's say I, as a user, I have three devices. Only the first time I install it on my first device, I will be counted towards the user pool of a developer, and uninstalling, reinstalling, uninstalling, reinstalling in the same year doesn't count as a new install. But for sure, once this 1 year rolls out and I still install, it will still be counted again as a first install. There are two cap out for this that were not part of the first few changes. And again, that's one of the big announcements for today. There's a small developer cap out, and there's a new no revenue developers cap out that was brought up during today's update, which if you follow the news, the developer of one of the official alternative app marketplaces, the AllStore Pal, and the developer of the Delta emulator, was at the European Commission and then asked this question. So the no revenue developer is, let's say you're a student and you just make an app and deploy it to the App Store. They more or less say, if you make no revenue, no digital revenue, no physical revenue, no ads, no, literally $0, you will never need to pay the CTF. Also, if you are a small developer starting out, and then throughout, they all created a kind of a 3 year period where if you go over 1 million, you have chances to not pay it. But depending on your size, after those 3 years, you might start to pay. And their reasoning for that is, if you grow, like if you become viral, if your app becomes viral, if your app becomes viral, you're not stuck with a huge bill from Apple. But if you make it a long tenure business, then you'll start to have to pay this core technology fee. So those new business terms, especially at the introduction of the DMA, were pretty weird. They were also exclusive. You have to say yes to get to them, and you were stuck with them. So if you decide 6 months after that, oh crap, I'm about to go over a million and I now did the calculation and it will cost me a shit ton of money, there was no coming back. And yet again, that was something that Apple backed off and saying, oh yeah, yeah, by the way, sorry. If you decide to go back to the standard business terms for the App Store or for using the iOS platform, you can go and blah, blah, blah. So this is also part of the updates that we've seen since January, and especially since March 7, when the DMA was introduced. So those big app store changes meant that there's two part where there's some app store changes that are available worldwide. And again, every time that Apple loosens the guideline for all developers, I think generally speaking, that's my take, it's good. Like, I think that they have so much of a grip on the app store that the second they give you an inch or a centimeter, I think as developers, you can always say, hey, it might not be for me, but I'm glad that new type of app, new businesses can be created and have success on the App Store. And hopefully, and as we've seen in the past 4 to 5 years, getting a centimeter at a time is better than getting no advancement whatsoever. But in my own opinion, the rest of this new business terms are utterly weird, especially especially when you stay on the App Store. We haven't talked about alternative app marketplaces. That's where I'm going next. But the part where, let's say you decide to want to take advantage of the lower commission and you decide to stay on the App Store, you still need to pay the core technology fee too. And that part to me is utterly strange because you already pay a commission knowing that you might not be on the App Store. Okay, you know what? That makes sense. On the App Store, you pay commissions. Outside the App Store, when I say it makes sense, just for the sake of conversation, I'll come to my own opinion about the core technology fee just in a bit. But you could say that it makes sense that on the App Store, you pay commission per transaction. And then outside of the App Store, you have to pay a core technology fee per install. But the fact that when you stay on the App Store, it is a combination of both on top of the App Store, the credit card processing fee, which whether it's Apple or a third party like Stripe or Adyen that charges for you or any other companies, like to me, like this 30%, you will never save it. You'll always be part of your fees. It means that you're more or less charged twice. And I wouldn't be surprised that if you do the calculation and you're a big app that does a lot of volume, maybe it will be better to stay at 15% for your subscription versus 10% plus 3% plus 50 cents per install. Like, I wouldn't be surprised that the math for a sizable chunk of small to medium businesses will come back to more or less 15% of their subscription prices goes back to Apple. There is a calculator on the website for you to do so, and I'm also glad that they kind of reversed the decision that you cannot go back to the normal terms and not the special terms for EU, because I think people should be entitled to try them and then say, oh crap, no, it's not for me, and then go back and not be stuck in something that literally could kill their business.
Like, to me, my headcanon of like what this core technology fee, especially when you stay on the App Store, is just like, well, I guess it also applies if you're off the App Store too, is just like desperately clinging to as much services revenue as humanly possible.
Yeah, you're making a good point. And it's literally feeling entitled to your success on their platform.
Because the cost of implementing iOS APIs and all of that stuff, like all of that, it's not relative to the number of installs that apps on the App Store get. It's entirely relative to the number of units Apple sells. Like, that's the scaling factor. It's not the number of installs. Like, fuck that shit. If I uninstall an app and reinstall it, the APIs don't cost more to develop.
Nope, they do not. And again, you could say, though, that it costs more money to run the App Store. But that, to me, is part of your commissions, part of the fees that is part of the App Store. And I think I think it all goes back to right now, and again, I haven't fully read the DMA law and blah, 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 but from a lot of what people have been summarizing on the web is there's kind of not a law, but kind of a lot of wording around the fact that unclear fees is not good in general, And yeah. I think that's kind of where they're trying to go back. So there it is, their own interpretation to say, okay, they don't like just a commission that includes everything, then we'll say 3% for this, 50 cents per install for that, and then the rest is real sales commission. I'm eager to see what the European committee will say about that, because one of the updates for the past 2 months has been that following Apple going public with how they will be how will they adopt the DMA for European users, is also the commission saying, oh yeah, we need to audit your implementation and review if it is compliant or not, which that is utterly funny that Apple is being served their own this own remedy to their thing, especially if you encountered issues with App Store reviewers, where it's literally you build your app, you submit it, or you build your update, you submit it, and it's like, nope, that's not allowed.
It also is heavily hinted that they don't think it's compliant, which is even funnier.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, we'll have to audit because we think something is weird. It's like, if you think something is weird, I wouldn't be surprised. It's because you have a feeling that there's something up. So yeah, to conclude the App Store changes section, I will always be in favor of more looser guidelines on the store to up to a certain level. But now it is looser guidelines or looser less restriction, but with a slap behind the head if you're too big, because you cannot be too successful on Apple platform and on the App Store, and that's why that's how the core technology fee gets you. Anything else to add before we talk about the alternative app marketplaces?
No, I mainly care about the alternative app marketplaces.
Yes. Oh yeah. This is the big part, is that now in Europe, people can build, and that's what Apple called them, alternative app marketplaces. From now on, I'll call them third-party app stores. So they've created a bunch of APIs to negate the criticism that Yannick has mentioned. And again, he's not the only one, so they didn't only do that for Yannick. Don't get me wrong here.
They don't do anything for me.
No, sadly. But one of the main criticism that Apple likes to promote is that sideloading is unsafe. Sideloading is a vector for privacy violation. So they're trying their best. They're trying their best, to keep a hand on the steering wheel that is your own app. So to do so, they've introduced a bunch of APIs that they've defined on how app marketplaces shall be built. So as a developer of a third-party app store, you also have to request an entitlement to be one of those. The CTF, the core technology fee, also applies to those developers, with the big gotcha is there is no 1 million free users or free install every year. It's first user of a third-party store, first user has to pay the CTF. So that does put a lot of constraints, especially financially, for those places to exist. And we'll talk about that, because I think the AllStore Pal has kind of an interesting way to not circumvent, but to finance that, I should say. One restriction that was lifted was that AAMs, so alternative app marketplaces, cannot, but now they can, be only dedicated to a sole developer's application. And that is something Yannick mentioned, and is a lot of the worries people had about sideloading is, oh my god, now to install Instagram, I'll have to go through Facebook's app store. And we all know that they'll take advantage of that to ask for way more privacy permissions for you to get Facebook installed correctly. So there's going to be no way for a user to try to control as much as you can your security and privacy in that world. Funnily enough, this came in from the March 12th update, so literally a few days after the DMA was active.
I do have a counterpoint, though, which is, what is stopping Facebook from just opening an app store for everyone to use alongside them? Or, like, Google Play decides to come to iOS. Like, technically, that would still be fine, and they could get away with everything they wanted, and Facebook has had app stores in the past.
It was the previous option before that was lifted. Right now, they could become a third-party app store only for the apps, and they would not be required to accept those. Whereas in the first iteration of the DMA implementation, they would have been required to accept third-party applications and third-party from their own view, not from Apple's view. One example that is not out yet, but that they did say they would build that, is one you mentioned, Epic. The Epic Game Store. I'm not sure if they'll, like, I didn't look at the recent news if they'll still name it the Epic Game Store, but
probably
that's my assumption, because that's how it's named on Mac and Windows, and on Android, now I think of it too. They have said that if you want to put your own apps, I assume apps means games here, you could send them their binary and then do whatever you want. So you're correct that even in the first situation, Facebook could have just started Facebook App Store that is not just for Facebook apps, and you could submit your app the same way that there on Android, there is the Amazon App Store, or I forgot the exact name because they cannot use App Store because trademarks.
It's App Store, but all one word, which is how they get around it.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. So the Amazon App Store and the Google Play Store too could come to iOS. So I am eager to see if that will happen, because as of today's recording, on May 2nd, the only official alternative app marketplaces is the AltStore Pal, which was mentioned previously. Before the introduction, because you might know already AltStore, they were using the free developer account thingy. I was reading again of how could you install App Store today, how you can install AltStore today.
I know how it works.
It's through the developer apps more or less. But now they have built a server app you run on your Mac that automatically creates the free developer account for you, which is weird, but it's fun. It's a fun workaround to make it work for outside of Europe users.
And honestly, it's still kind of a pain in the ass if you don't pay the $99.
Yes, because I think it expires after 90 days, so it'd have to be renewed. And I've seen that up until I was 16, they had a workaround, which was, I think, a security hole that they used to lift the three apps per free app developer installed on the same device to go up to 10. But now on 17, that hole is fixed. That security hole is fixed. So it's still back to only 3.
And you have to fiddle around with provisioning profiles a lot. It's really
annoying. Yeah. If you've been an iOS developer, you kind of know a lot of that. And if you've been a developer at the places where you also have access to an enterprise certificate, which more or less allows you to do sideloading, kind of, you know how nice it is and also how not problematic, but you have to be pretty technical to make it work. Alternative app marketplaces have special rules. Not everybody can become one of those third-party app stores.
Unfortunately.
I guess it's fortunately and unfortunately. I think they're trying to put... Again, we all know the reason to do that is, again, to keep an end on the steering wheel, and it is going to be a common theme for this episode. But I think at the same time, it's their Apple's way to say, yo, we see that there are real security and privacy risks with this. So at least if the government is forcing us to do so, we'll try to do our best to minimize those and then point the finger to the government and say, oh, you forced us to accept those developers because you accepted our rules. So the special rules are, you need to be a European company, no surprises. You need to follow local laws and all the things that applies as, as being a European company. So you cannot sell drugs on those app stores and things like that. You cannot do illegal things there. You need to handle governmental requests promptly, like takedown requests. You need to monitor and act on fraud. You need to review and protect developers' intellectual property. You were supposed to provide a letter of credit just in case some people don't pay or things like that of 1 million euro, but that was kind of like downplayed in the March 5th update. Or, this one is pretty funny, be of a good standing developer in the App Store already. Meaning that if you're already an app developer on the App Store and now you want to become an alternative app marketplace, you can use your goodwill credits that you got through the App Store, aka not being Epic Games, and apply for, of course, a special entitlement to be an app marketplace. Because all the API I mentioned before that allows for showing apps, downloading apps, things like that, are behind an entitlement.
See, this is the problem with the foundation of these rules switching so often. I had forgotten that the letter of credit thing got sort of hand-waved away because there have been so many fucking changes that I can't keep track of them anymore.
Yes.
But like my original reaction to that was, you're essentially just allowing other gatekeepers only to create app stores, which means they're probably going to also have similar bad actor intentions as Apple. And you're going to have like the Facebooks come out and do all of their creepy shit. The Googles come out and do all their creepy shit. And it's like, who realistically is going to have that letter of credit and open an app store that isn't going to be a scammy piece of shit? And that's kind of the worry I had when that was a thing.
Right.
So good thing they kind of hand waved that away.
Yeah, especially because, again, I don't want nor care about the financial behind the first App Store. Because, again, we know that App Store is more or less one guy, Riley Tetsuit. And that, again, he's not one of the other big gatekeepers. So it was interesting to see that he was the first one, or I should say E, but I think it's E and his small team of maybe one or two extra people, deploy App Store Pal, which launched on April 17. And
I think technically the other people on his team are just adults that let him get to do stuff because he's 17 or something.
No, I think I thought he was older now. Again, older by maybe a few years, but not that much. But
I'm pretty sure he's technically still not an adult, though.
Wow, okay. So, again, we're not going to gossip or tabloid type of news on this podcast. But what I wanted to say...
I pointed out that his developer account is at his mom's name because...
Oh, yeah, I forgot you told me.
Yeah,
that.
Delta is technically registered to his mom's name.
But yeah, so it is the first alt store, the first alternative app marketplace. And I'm kind of surprised, but kind of not. I think with all the restriction put in place, I wouldn't be surprised that an Apple nerd will be the one to do it.
The other thing is it was already developed. It was just sitting there.
True. It was there, but now with possibly less install restriction. And the creative way that Riley found out to finance this project was to say that it is a subscription app, meaning that to get Alt Store, you need to pay a monthly fee. And I think, I'm just looking because I forgot to take down a note of this, but I think it can even be paid through a Patreon subscription.
No, you can't pay for all, you can pay for like extra features in Delta via Patreon, but you're not paying for Alt Store via Patreon.
Okay, that's maybe the things I'm mixing, or the way you could through Alt Store, you could offer an app this way too.
Yep.
But you're correct that you more or less need to pay $1.50 per year plus European taxes, more or less to cover, and they say, your subscription covers Apple's core technology fee, payment processing, and server costs. Don't want to pay or not in EU, download the version below. That is the one that we already discussed. Another key element from alternative app marketplaces or third-party app stores is that they are required to be installed via the web. Or they are allowed to be installed from the web. I forgot if they are fully required. Or it's one of those that they were and then it changed, but I forgot to take note of that.
Well, it would have been really strange that you could go to the app store and get like a porn app store.
That's true. That's true. Which this is also something I am a bit surprised. Again, not surprised, kind of surprised that an Apple nerd did something, but I'm kind of surprised that the porn industry didn't jump on that to say like, oh my god, we'll have our own app stores and blah blah blah, and be like really loud about the fact that they're more or less the first one or one of the first few ones.
I'm sure they'll have stuff, it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I guess it goes down into the same category of who knows if Facebook, Google, and other big players, or even Microsoft, will have their own third-party app stores on iOS, and I'm eager to see if they will.
I would bet on Microsoft.
Really? Okay. That is the one company that I mentioned that you feel more strongly that they would maybe jump on that?
I think Google is likely as well, but Microsoft, like, especially, well, I guess they've been pushing so hard with like their Visual Studio tools for deploying iOS apps, but now I think you told me they were discontinuing that, like the Visual Studio hockey app stuff that they.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Hockey app is now you have a year to move away from it.
Yeah. See, if they hadn't announced that, I would have said like it just makes sense because they have half the story already. So just make the app store.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, they do have distribution and all of that fun stuff. Part of that.
Yeah.
But no, again, they decided to move away from that. And
also, like, parentheses here, just about Microsoft and the DMA. Microsoft has said they are open to adding new third-party app stores to the Xbox as well. So the fact that they are open to that and they allow, for example, selling Steam games through the Windows Store, which is really weird. like, all of that interconnectedness makes me think, like, they would probably be the most game to actually just open a store on iOS.
Mm. Interesting. I kind of forgot Microsoft. But I kind of forgot about Microsoft, but I think you're correct. I'm not really sure about Google, but Microsoft, I could see them jump into that at arena.
Every other Google Play service is available on iOS, which is why it feels weird that like apps wouldn't be.
Interesting. Yeah, we shall see. Regarding the third-party app stores, I think in concepts, they are a good idea. And I think it's nice to see that being open. But the way the core technology fee is implemented makes it really hard for people to build them on purpose, I would assume. Even if I'm a bit more pro sideloading, I was worried that if third-party app stores were something viable or included or part of the spec, let's put it this way, I would have my worry that Facebook would do it. And the fact that at first it was not part of the thing, but I guess Apple was worried that the EU would say, no, you have to do it, and then revert it. Before or possibly based on feedback they already received before they got told, hey, you might not be compliant.
Trick question. Do you think Facebook is a developer in good standing with Apple and the App
Store? Oh, wow. That's a trick question. I think it will be like reinstating the Epic game developer account.
They'll you have to send us a letter to prove to us that you aren't going to fuck it up, and they'll say we won't fuck it up, and then they say nah, that's not good enough, sorry.
Yes, and also I think now with what happened with Epic, they'll do it with grinding teeth. They will be like, more or less it will be painful, but they have to click approve on that button. So yeah, so that is to me the part that I'm a bit more worried towards the alternative app marketplaces. I think that might sound a bit strange, but if third-party app stores were not a thing, but sideloading in general was, I think it would make it a bit more okay. But I know I say that, and it's not a well-defined opinion that I have. So I know this is more of a kind of on shaky ground opinion, personally speaking. So I say that too with a grain of salt. But to me, I kind of wish that third-party app stores were a bit more allowed or not built in such a way that, again, 50 cents euro per install for all users more or less forces those third-party app stores to be a subscription-based like a base business. As what we've seen with AllStore, either it's going to be a cost center for big companies and you have to have big, deep pockets, or you finance it by having big commissions through the apps that you have on the store. And I'm eager to see if AllStore will go there. I wouldn't be surprised, for example, Microsoft or even Epic Game will just pass that bill to the developers. And now the developers will have to pay for their own core technology fee and the one from the store. So I'm eager to see where this will go, especially if bigger players jump into that arena.
An interesting thing to think about as well is Epic controls Unreal Engine. They could technically just add an export to Epic Game Store button directly into the Unreal Engine. I don't know if it necessarily bypasses Xcode, but it could automate a lot of that stuff to just have your app directly on the apps. Well, not on the App Store, but on the Epic Game Store.
Right.
Seamlessly from within Unreal Engine. And if you apply that thinking, Facebook has React Native, which they maintain the official extension for in Visual Studio Code. Google has the same thing with Flutter and Android Studio and Visual Studio Code, and I think the JetBrains editor that I don't remember the name of. So right. Technically, they all have developer tooling that they can integrate their personal app stores into if they launch theirs, and then just make the deployment path even smoother than what it is right now with the App Store and Xcode.
Yes, but no. Which is a great segue to my third and last point for sideloading, is app distribution changes. If you may recall that even if alternative app marketplaces are a thing now, your app still needs to be signed by somebody to run on iOS devices. And you might guess who this somebody is. And it is, of course, Apple. And more or less, the way they brought this up is to bring the notarization technology that we've seen on the Mac in the past few years to iOS.
Okay, so, but as someone who has notarized Mac apps before, that is significantly, significantly simpler than literally anything you do on iOS.
I guess. And I guess you say that because you don't need to have a development certificate. Like, the fact that that doesn't have to happen is what you feel is simplified.
Yeah, you just do build an archive, click notarize, wait 5 minutes. Oh, it's notarized, export as .app. It's done.
Oh, yeah. And I think that part, you're correct, could be automated through the development tools of React Native or even the Unreal Engine. But I think you... And that's one thing I'm eager to see that is currently unclear, but you still need an app to be signed to run on the phone.
I think I technically still code sign my stuff on the Mac anyway, but...
On the phone for sure. Even on development apps, you need to sign them with the developer signing certificate. So I think I wouldn't be surprised that a lot of those apps, you're still, like, you'll need to be... an Xcode developer. You have to go through Xcode to either trigger a code signing request for a dev, the development signing request, and things like that. So I don't think it negates that part for development. It might just be that for non-native technologies, you might then end up using your alternative app marketplaces to do just that, to also do kind of your own test flight. So you then have one-click button, it goes into a different bucket that is not the prod bucket, and then you could use your app and then do that. But
you would still need to do all that signing shit to get into your semi-test flight.
you would need to do the notarization process, which involves sending some amount of app details. Because one thing I didn't mention, and that's why I wanted to keep it separately, because now, too, there's an update to that, is that part of the notarization process, you kind of need to fill in the App Store Connect details of your app so that when an install request is received by iOS through an app marketplace, you do get a native prompt from the OS telling you, are you sure you want to install app X? And app X will be like, you'll need the name, who has developed it, and also a few screenshots. And I'll have a few links from the developer website in the show notes, and I'll invite you to go to look at that because there is a few examples, especially in the DMEA article about that. I don't think on the article itself, but I'll put a link in the show notes regarding the what you need to do to become an app, an alternative app marketplace. And I know this page has a link or a screenshot of the prompt.
Just a correction, because I misspoke. Do need a developer certificate to notarize, because that's the entire point. You have to sign and then notarize. You can't just notarize an unsigned app. Mm-hmm. So you can't do that. And also, if you just have a signed app that is not notarized, it no longer launches for the past few years on the Mac. So you sort of have to notarize, which is a pain in the ass, but we do it anyway.
Yeah, and a good example of breaking notarization is when there was spyware in the torrent app transmission.
Yeah.
And then the developer revoked their developers or their signing certificate for notarization, and then boom.
No, I think they just added it to XProtect then.
I think they did both. At first, they added to the malware protection, and then the developer was able to also revoke it, or maybe Apple revoked that certificate from the developer too. And that's that. So that. You're correct. Again, anything needs to be signed, especially on iOS. Everything needs to be signed. You cannot skip that. So
the reason I didn't think about it is because since the only thing I really notarize is Cizura, and I have a personal dev account where I just use the automatic signing, I don't really worry about it. But it's true with all the work shit that we do, that would be complicated to manage the certificates, and it would still be hell.
Especially in a flow like yours, where you have you manage your customer's developer account, because you cannot have a white label account. That's one of the other restrictions from the dev store, from the Apple Developer Center, is that you cannot do white labeling anymore. And that used to be allowed, but no longer. I remember it caused a bit of kerfuffle with people, and we had to deal with that. From some products we used to offer at work, which came from an acquisition. That was fun, from what I heard. Lastly, on notarization, like I said, you need to notify Apple, blah, blah, blah. They didn't mention that they'll more or less do an official App Store review, because, again, they cannot do that. But they can't, or their own interpretation of the DMA, they can do like security scanning and things like that. So I wouldn't be surprised that the automatic process that happens when you upload to the App Store will just be the same with notarization, and also applies to the Mac right now, which is scans for that the 5-minute delay Yannick mentioned is more or less for that. They do a bit of scanning of your binary to see if there is common spyware or spam, things like that in it, and then just say approved. But now they can, and I think the other thing that they mentioned too is that you cannot use private APIs even for this.
You can't on the Mac either.
Yeah, they'll scan for that. So it is kind of, you can do things that the App Store doesn't allow, but using private API, that's a big no-no in both cases. One of the main reasons why I decided to have app distribution as its own category and not talk about it in the third-party app store is because of another change that was first announced in March 12, and then we got the first iteration shipped a few weeks ago on March 16, is web distribution. I mentioned web distribution, part of the alternative app marketplaces, but in the first iteration of the compliance to the DMA, Apple was saying no. Your sideloading apps have to go through a third-party store, but not anymore. So in theory, in a few weeks, I would assume, because it's currently part of 17.5 beta 2, that once 17.5 ships in the EU, a website can now trigger the same install request that third-party app stores can, and you'll get the same notification, the same like installation prompt, excuse me, with the same details that you've submitted through that. And that to me, like, that to me is what a lot of people were expecting when the EU or the European Committee came out with the DMA and say, oh yeah, you need to not be a gatekeeper or like a intermediate gatekeeper, and that's under this category that the App Store is, and even iOS is an iOS one. So that's where both kind of overlap on the same thing, is that in theory, the spirit of the law more or less says you should allow any software to be installed on platform, and web distribution is for sure a big vector to do that. And I think, to me, this is one of the big change that I think a lot of people, myself included, were expecting. And I want to see how much people will, like how much developer will use it, especially I think it, because now it does downplay the need to create your own third-party store. You can just put the link on your website, go through the notarization process, and voila, you're back to Mac distribution.
Yeah,
the traditional way of distributing software on the Mac, just having a link on the web on the store on the website, and then poof, it downloads a DMG, and then you can just skip that because this link will now trigger the typical installation process that you know and somewhat love from the App Store, just with a different alert. So on that one, I'm eager to see when it officially launches, who will be the first user or what will be the first big use of it, because to me, this is big, real big. And that is, ignoring the caveats, and I was not surprised to say, okay, yes, the app will be notarized. Like, knowing that the notarization technology already exists on the Mac, I'm like, minus one surprise, not even zero surprise, minus one, that Apple is using that. And to me, that's more or less what I was saying. It's like, just bring notarization on iOS. If I click on a button and it installs from a website, like, sure, let me do that. And I'm kind of glad to see it be there. And again, like I kind of expect Yannick to do, and I fully expect Apple to do, the first big crisis, whether it's the first spyware versus the first big fraud through web distribution, when it will happen, be certain, like 100% certain, that is going to be in Apple newsroom saying, see, they forced us to do this. See, it broke security. It broke user privacy. This was a bad idea. They'll put their finger to this problem and make it big. Even if that's kind of my take to this, a lot of the security and especially the fraud arguments against sideloading is, I'm not saying that no system is better than a somewhat working system, but you cannot also say that your system is perfect, which I think Apple tends to say that the App Store is, without any fraud vectors, and that's another lie. They really like to play the card that the App Store, the App Store is perfect. And that, to me, is something that diminishes the benefits of sideloading and the benefits of the App Store too, by saying, oh my god, the web is bad. But the App Store is kind of bad for fraud. You can hear stories for the past 15 years of the App Store say, of, oh, this apps I downloaded charged me like $15 per day as a subscription. Or the one that is the worst one during the Touch ID eras was like, it was an app was guiding you to put your finger on top of the Touch ID, and then poof, it would then trigger the in-app purchase flow. Like, there was a way to scam users on the App Store, and ways that you're like, how the hell did App Review do nothing and just approve this app? Like, because you use the app and it's a flagrant way to scam users.
And that's one of the funny things. If you go back to like the early days of the App Store, people were talking about how like the App Store was going to be like this curated experience, and it was going to be heavily like opinionated, and Apple isn't going to like garbage into the store. And that turned out to not be the case at all. But I think if you open the door for third-party app stores, simultaneously, it kind of makes sense if Apple would want to go to that model and be more restrictive on what they allowed in their store. They could have a higher bar for quality to get in and then just push all of that garbage onto the other stores.
Agreed.
I don't think they'll do it because that garbage makes them a lot of money.
I agree. I was exactly going there. And you mentioned that a lot. Like, a lot of the reason why it needed government push for a lot of what we already discussed in this episode to happen is literally because Apple did not self-regulate. And I'm kind of going into my conclusion a bit, but I'll stop there. But yeah, self-regulation will have skipped a lot of the downsides of the DMA and also a lot of the downsides of how side-loading has been currently implemented. But hey, that's what happens when you don't want to do it yourself. Somebody will force you at some point.
I want to go back to what you said about when there's going to be the first crisis and then I'm going to be speaking out. So I want to actually offer my opinion about the web distribution thing because I don't think I've said it anywhere.
No, go on.
Which is, as a developer, if I was making Cesura for iOS, I would be interested in distributing it from the web. And you're going to say, that's inconsistent with all the shit you said at the start of the episode, which is true.
I am flabbergasted. I am surprised you say it this way. Wow. Okay.
And this is the problem, is that I have to wear my developer hat and my caring about other users hat. The developer hat is like, yeah, I don't particularly care about the restrictions of the App Store. I would personally prefer if my apps were financed by something like a Patreon model, but the App Store doesn't let you mention that you have a Patreon for the support of your apps because it's like circumventing App Store payments or whatever. I would prefer that kind of a revenue model in my apps if I were to have any, but the App Store doesn't allow it. Therefore, I would sort of be forced out into web distribution. So that's the optic I have. Also, I think my apps only appear to appeal to nerdy people and not general users. So I don't think I would be missing out on much of an audience doing that. But I still think it's a bad pattern for regular people who, like I said, you should have the right not to care. And the fact that Epic Games is going to be training a million little kids to go sideload shit is just making them more likely to fall into a trap later. And that's the thing that bothers me. And I know that there is no solution that is going to make everyone happy, including myself, in this. There's going to have to be compromise somewhere because the days of the one true app store are over, basically. And also to go back to what you said about the newsroom, this week I've been thinking a lot about Steve Jobs because I'm really sick of hearing about AI. And I was thinking, God, if Steve Jobs was still alive, he'd write thoughts about AI and everybody would shut the fuck up. And can you imagine thoughts on the DMA? How funny that would be?
You know what? I think it would be, but some of the newsroom article, especially I was rereading the one about that is kind of related to DMA, but the one about the Spotify bitching to the DMA and not the DMA, but the European Commission and European Commission dinging Apple and then Apple being real bitter about it. Like that to me kind of was like, it's rare to say that myself, but kind of give me Steve Jobs vibes. I was like, kind of, oh boy, there are old time Apple executives that are pissed about that and they want you to be aware that they're pissed about that. So that was interesting. By the way, I really went back to the announcement of the Outsource Pal because I remembered seeing some news coverage regarding the Patreon integration, and you know what, they are providing this. You could, as an app that is being distributed, and that's the second app that is provided by Riley Tetsut, is its clipboard manager called Clip. And more or less, if you provide any pledge through Patreon, you get access to the app. That's how this one works. It requires money, one thing, but those type of different monetization scheme is one big great benefit of different third-party app stores, because you could define that. And I wouldn't be surprised, you could also do that now with web distribution directly on Patreon without having an app.
Yeah, and we're only focusing on DMA stuff in this episode, but I think in another jurisdiction sometime last year, they announced that you can mention other payment methods, including potentially maybe Patreon in like that particular country. I don't remember which one it is on the top of my head because there has been so much antitrust shit.
Japan? Is that Japan? Because I remember Japan, they have something regarding, like, they have a bigger kind of cop-out, the similar cop-out that reader apps have, kind of, right
it
now.
It might be Japan or Korea. I think Korea had a thing, too.
Yeah. It's one of those two. But I'm pretty, like, 95-99% sure it's an Asian country.
Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, like, because all of the little cutouts around the map have different rules, until we actually converge on a set of rules that actually applies to us, we can't change shit.
Again, good segue to my last point. Now that this is the way of work, or I guess this is life right now for European users, I'm eager to see what's coming next. I don't want to dive too deep into the US DOJ case because it's not exactly the same thing, but has certain elements that are similar.
It's much dumber.
Fair. And I think one thing from my personal understanding of it is that like all the app distribution, third-party app stores is kind of a side thing, but still present, but not as deep of a change that the DMA forces Apple to do. But I am eager to see how inspired other geographies or countries will be by the EU. Again, if we talk about our own government, usually we tend to either be a bit more aggressive or a bit different, but we do tend to base a lot of legislation on US stuff because they're literally your neighbor. But we do have a tendency to look at what the EU does too in Canada. So I am eager to see what will come there. And I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I wouldn't be surprised some South American countries will look into that. So other Asian countries will look into that. Middle East, Africa, things like that. I think this was like the EC is the big one. So, but it is not the last one. I wouldn't be surprised they're going to be a year-long saga with them saying that Apple is not complying with what they do, so there's going to be a lot of back and forth, things like that. So for sure, this story will continue to evolve, but I think this opened the floodgates, and we will see more of these in different places. For sure, the fact that the US have something in the same vein already open with Apple is going to be a story that has to play in the next years to come. But to me, all of these, even if the floodgates are now open, I'll repeat a bit what I've said previously, and I hinted at it, is I still strongly believe that Apple has grown so much in the past decade that they should have found a way to self-regulate, and even before that, figure out that, you know what, we're kind of becoming big now. So we're no longer the alternative player against Microsoft and Windows. In the world that we live in where the smartphone is king, yes, you can argue that Android is bigger and things like that. I don't negate that. But Apple is a huge player, way bigger than it was when it was the Mac versus the PC. And I think it should have raised some bells. And the fact that I think the company was laser focused on making money because of that, they lost touch on where they would need to go to ensure that they can still control everything. I think that the more this evolves, the less I believe that even self-regulation would have circumvent the governments or the world governments to do that, especially in like in Europe. But I think it will have make them in a better spot to argue against being included because they could point to, hey, we've already done this big list of things.
Small business program.
Yeah, again, but it's one thing, the small business program.
It's the thing they did.
Yeah, and it is the thing that right now more or less makes them say, oh, I think, was it like 9? I know I've seen this graphic during my research on the developer website. I think they were saying, like, oh, 90%, no, I forgot, it's 99% of developers won't be impacted by the CTF. It was like a big number. I think it's, yeah, it's 99% of developers are not impacted by the CTF. It's like, yeah, but if that's the only thing you point to, like, you kind of don't have an argument still. So right now, what more or less happens is because they were not able to do bigger changes to stay, relevant, meant that they are forced to remove one of their ends on the steering wheel. And who's taking that place? It is governments. And I'm not going into the politics of what you think our listener about, like, the place of a government on controlling businesses and things like that. But if we go into the typical list of priorities from Apple, for sure, Apple is the first, then Apple users, and now we can say developers, and then maybe below that, the governments. But for sure, when the EU comes with law, and especially laws that targets big tech companies, like, what they want to protect is protect the EU and protect EU citizens. And Apple's capitalism thingy is down the list. So now they're being forced by the EU to do things the EU way. And that's why we see newsroom things being pissed at the European Commission. Because I think, like, and that's the part I feel there's not that much people that have to be blamed on this, is the way this was navigated was laser focusing into making more money for a big corporation that is Apple nowadays, or a huge corporation that is Apple nowadays, that I wouldn't be surprised they would have been in a better spot if they've literally had the hubris to self-regulate. But sadly, that's not where we're at, and that's why the DMA is forcing so much big changes.
I think it's interesting to contrast the DMA, how I received the DMA to how I received GDPR.
Interesting.
Because both of them are technically EU things. So
they are EU things.
Yeah, they are EU things. So GDPR, I technically believe in the goal of what that was trying to accomplish. I think ultimately they failed in a lot of aspects and they just made life hell for everyone for no reason. Little to no gain for actual end users. They are annoyed with cookie dialogues everywhere that don't even work half the time. If you look at the source code, like, a lot of those aren't hooked up to anything. They're just cosmetic cookie dialogues, and it's like, cool. I'm so glad. So you have that.
I think John Gruber had the perfect quote for this, is that with GDPR, the European, I think it was still the European Commission, but the European governments were thinking that by putting this rule, it would create market forces to change the market. But in the end, they were like, no, the market pushed back and pushed back strong. And then in the end, the citizens are losing.
Yeah. And I think it shows that the regulators don't really know what they're regulating, and they put a bunch of regulation there that is just a bunch of extra paperwork. But in practice, aside from, like, mandated data exporting and right to disappear, like, there is hardly any end user gain from GDPR, and the market is exactly the same as it was. And I think it failed. It is a catastrophic failure. I think the DMA indifference, at least only focusing with regards to Apple, I have not paid attention to the other parts of the market. Maybe they'll fuck up Facebook again. I don't know. I think I disagree to some degree with the goals of it, but I think the results we have gotten out of Apple so far lead me to be somewhat optimistic. It is not as bad as what I had thought it was going to be, with the asterisk that audit is still upcoming and maybe they will be forced to do more shit. So I don't know. I have a better feeling about the outcome of the DMA than I do about GDPR. And the other thing is, like, GDPR was kind of forced upon the rest of the world which is something that, like, I don't believe in that kind of, like, reaching out of your jurisdiction and forcing other countries to do shit to comply with your laws. And, like, I understand you're serving EU customers, so you have to deal with the laws of the EU. But, like, when your stupid bureaucracy doesn't accomplish shit, what motivation do I have to actually support it? Like, that's the end problem, is, like, the solution wasn't good, therefore I don't feel like you have grounds to actually force me to adopt this solution that solves nothing. But yeah, DMA so far looking good. Fingers crossed that they won't fuck it up further with this audit.
Yeah, because you could say that GDPR on, or a few months after its introduction, without seeing where the market forces are, where lending, you could say that you would be optimistic. I'm not saying that's what's your case, but generally speaking, that could have been a valid opinion at that time.
I have never been optimistic about GDPR. It always seemed complete bullshit to me.
I didn't mention it was never your opinion. I just said that it could be one valid opinion to have at that time. So, which brings me to say that I echo your optimism, or your kind of a general more positive feeling towards how the DMA is being applied, especially by Apple, and especially about all of the criticisms we personally give them as iOS developers. I mean, if one of us is not really an iOS developer anymore, but
there is important context though that makes this different from the Android example that I presented earlier, which is Apple has generally been a lot more conservative in what APIs they allow access to than Android. Android, for the past however many years it's been since it started, Google has been gradually walking back every single API that they have introduced since the start of Android that was too permissive, that they regret adding to the OS. And this is actually sort of becoming an issue to certain clients of ours, where they want to build their device on Android, but the APIs that they need to actually be able to do the things that they want to do with their device no longer exist in the operating system because Google regretted adding them to the OS, right? So there's a lot of funny stuff like that. Whereas Apple, because they just slowly think about things before implementing them, they have added much less surface area to attack with.
Yeah, and I think it really differs the vision. And I think still to this day, the reason Google is backpedaling a lot of those APIs is because they are now trying to make Android more of a general consumer OS. Whereas when it was conceived and implemented, it was really as kind of I know it's not technically the right thing to say it, but the way I see it is, it's a Linux foundation, aka, like, we know about a shit ton of different distros, Linux distro based on Ubuntu, for example, or even Debian, but you can paper a lot of things on top of it. And that's how I recall seeing Android at Android 1.0, is it's a foundation for you, or for self smartphone manufacturers, to be like, you want to put your shit on top of it, you can customize the OS. It was not conceived as a turnkey solution to just say, you put it on your phone and it does the thing. iOS was not built as a turnkey solution, but it was built into, we control the OS, we control the hardware, and those two work end in end, and we keep a tight leash on the features available to the app developers. Whereas the developer market for Android 1.0 was more or less custom OS builder, not app developers. Is always how I've seen it.
Kind of related to that, like, the other day someone at work asked me, hey, does iOS have an API to steal focus from the currently running app? And I was like, well, Android does, but iOS does not.
Oh boy. Just that somebody asked you this. Oh, that makes me cringe. Oh wow. Good. I think that more or less wraps it up. What I wanted to discuss this week about sideloading and how the DMA made it a possibility. Yannick made a great point. Sadly for us, we can just read about it, see video, watch videos, but we cannot experience it as Canadians. We're not part of the people that can take advantage of this, even if we were to travel to Europe. So I for sure am eager to see what it will take for us to maybe be under this or get access to those features. And again, I'm not making any statement about my workplace, but just as a dev, I would be curious to just go play with the alternative app marketplaces API, just because I'm quite curious. The documentation seems pretty extensive. Not, I don't want to build an alternative app marketplace, but to me, like, it's a new API, so, and sometimes, as you might recall from our WWDC extravaganza episodes, we are curious about APIs that Apple releases. And for me, those are one of them. Again, I wouldn't be surprised I could play on my own computer and things like that, even without the entitlement. But those are something that are making me curious. I'm eager to see, again, how will this evolve? As you've already seen, and I hope if you follow those news already, you've seen that this is an evolving document. This is a live document. There's a lot of back and forth between the European Commission and Apple and all the different gatekeepers. Today, officially since May 7, iPadOS was not included, and that was pretty funny because everybody knows that iOS and iPadOS are more or less the same code base, but the European Commission defined iPadOS as a gatekeeper OS, so now Apple has to more or less backport, and I put that in scare quotes because we all know it will just run. But they
it's just
that,
a feature flag, mostly.
Yes, which I wouldn't be surprised at how they develop it. But funny enough, they say, "Oh, it's coming this fall," so it takes until the fall to update a feature flag. Which that made me laugh so much that they're like, "Oh yeah, they give us until the fall to implement those changes. We'll turn the feature flag on this fall." So this is yet again to show that this is an always fresh story, so expect follow-up to come in the future episodes. And I would be surprised, depending on what we see in different countries, hopefully in Canada too, that we might revisit this topic in the months and years to come. And that's it for me.
Awesome. If you want to find our previous episodes, you can find them at limitlesspossibility.net. You can also find the show notes for this particular episode at limitlesspossibility.net/227. Yes, I inverted that. I don't know why I inverted that, but there you go. If you're in the EU and you can use alternative app stores, let us know what you think. We are at limipo_podcast@mastodon.social on the Fediverse. You can also find us individually. I am at socarina@icosahedron.website, and Yukadivia is at
Luco@mastodon.social.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.